Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Matt, and this is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, your beacon of freedom and the American way of life. Tune in every Friday for a new episode as we dive into the world of liberty and what makes our country great. All right, guys, happy Friday. And I know I'm happy because today we're doing a wine flight. This is going to be a lot of fun. We appreciate you tuning back in here on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit. So every now and then, as many of you know that follow us on the podcast and that follow us over on the YouTube channel, go to IraqVeteran8888. A lot of these episodes we put on our YouTube channel as well in video form if you wish to see our ugly mugs. But we love doing flights here on LLP, and we haven't done a lot of wine as of yet, but we have done a ton of different flights. We've done bourbon. We've done, I mean, gosh, you name it, scotch. I believe we did a sake episode.
Tequila.
So we rum. On the scotch, we broke it down and did, we did it by region. We've done blended scotch. We've done all kinds of stuff.
Yep. We've gotten into a lot of different spirits and things, but wine is a completely different animal in terms of how it's approached. And I believe that it's probably important to make the distinction here that if you are looking for some illustrious, well-to-do person that is a wine expert, you are most certainly in the wrong place. You are not at that location. I am not a wine expert. I probably don't taste this wine properly. I know you're supposed to swish it around and spit it out and gargle it or whatever the heck you're supposed to do.
Aerate it in your mouth.
Yeah, but that stuff. And so probably by the standards of what a professional wine tester would tell you to do, we're probably breaking all the rules. I believe it should also be a disclaimer. We're going to pronounce a bunch of these fancy names incredibly wrong, but that's okay. I'm not French. It's not my first language. It's not a language I speak at all. So, you know, with that being out of the way, we're going to dive into this a little bit. The United States in particular has a very rich wine region along the West Coast.
We do, yeah. The most well-known being Napa Valley. So Napa Valley is in California. It produces all of the top-tier American wines. It has to do with the soil. It's extremely fertile soil, produces great grapes year after year. I am not an expert. I'm not even really a wine guy, but being into the spirits, meaning like I really like bourbon, I really like other spirits, you kind of learn a little bit about everything. And it's interesting because when you start finding hobbies like cigars, I love cigars, lots of things overlap. So like soil, how soil affects the flavor profile, how altitude affects the flavor profile. And when you start looking at things that affect, you know, say cigars or coffee beans, the same exact factors affect grapes. So all those things kind of coexist together. So it's very easy for someone to say, well, hey, I'm into cigars or I'm into coffee. It's an easy transition to say, well, I can get into wine because I already know half of it. I already know how the soil and the nutrients in the soil and the altitude affect the flavor. So now I just have to learn about wine in general.
And that's a very good observation. I mean, just like it's almost akin to the way that people discuss the Scotch regions, right? When every Scotch maker, okay, has their own different take on it, and they swear that theirs is the best and the most unique of the region. So there tends to be a lot of that marketing that goes behind it. You know, not only the marketing of, oh, this region's better than that region, and you should always look for, you know, wine from this given region. So I can see where, just like in the Scotch world, it would be tempting for them to kind of tout their region as being the top region of the area for winemaking. But I think that it definitely does come down to differences in the way that people approach their palate, what they like. There is a such thing as a cold weather grown wine versus a warm weather grown wine, you know, so different wine making regions all around the world. And again, I'm not claiming to be an expert. I can only go by, you know, some of the information I've read and everything. So please take it with a grain of salt. I'm not claiming to be some, you know, over glorified wine expert.
You're not a certified sommelier?
No, I'm certainly not. All right. I'm certainly not. But I have, you know, had the luxury of having tried quite a bit of wine. Okay. So what I can do is go, okay, when I look at wine tasting, I go, all right, I drink this wine, I either like it or I don't. And that's the bottom line. Like, everyone's palate is a little bit different. Some people's palates are not quite as well defined, right? So some people may taste something a little different in what they're drinking than what you or I might, right? So everyone's a little bit different. Some people, they like really cheap wine because they just like a simple flavor, and maybe they dig that, right? I can't tell you how many times in my experience that I've gone to some, like, you know, fancy dinner meeting or whatever, suit and tie type of thing, and you're meeting with someone and someone orders a really expensive bottle of wine, right? And you're thinking, you know, you're in that moment because you're dressed up and it's a fancy restaurant with nice linen and the waiters are, you know, wearing suits, like, you know, some fancy type of thing, a 5-star restaurant. And you're thinking, okay, this guy ordered this wine that looks really expensive. And they pour it in a glass and you go, okay, I'm expecting to get kissed on my lips by, you know, puppies or something, or unicorns. And you're expecting this over elevated experience that is being promised to you. And then upon sipping the wine, you're like, doesn't really do it for me. Or you're thinking, well, why is this expensive when all I'm really tasting in my head is like boxed wine from Walmart, right?
Right.
So I have talked to a lot of people that I've dealt with in my travels that have tasted tons of expensive wine and cheap wine. And their advice to me as a wine drinker, especially when you're a beginning wine drinker and getting into different wines, is let your palate be the guide, right? Like, if you taste it and you like it, well, then by gosh, drink it. If you taste it and you hate it, you may not know why you hate it, but don't drink it, right? And a lot of times, some of the cheaper wines end up being some people's favorite wines. And they just kind of go more off of the flavor town profile that they're getting, or they're expecting a much more simpler palate or a simpler taste. And they like that kind of simple, familiar taste over something that's very complicated and very involved when you're drinking it.
I agree. And it does. And it's the same thing with any type of a spirit that you're drinking. There's a crawl, walk, run phase of it. So that crawl phase is like, hey, I'm just getting into wine. I like red wine, and you might like something that's sweet. So you get something that's sweet and you really enjoy it and you drink it and you drink it and drink it. And then you're like, you know what? I want to try something else. So then you're in the walk phase. You start getting something that's a little bit more complex. So it's sweet, but then you're reading the tasting notes and it says, oh, hey, it's going to have nutty undertones and it's going to finish with like cream or whatever. So you start to look for those, you start to search it out. And then
that's right.
And then you get into like the more advanced stuff where you're not tasting the sweet at all, even though it's there, your brain is searching. It's searching for the small minute flavor that, you know, isn't there overtly, but you have to find it. And you're like, ha. And it almost becomes like a little game. So you're like, all right, I'm going to search for the flavor that I'm looking for.
Well, it's almost like a comfort food in a way. Like a wine that has a simple taste and a simple profile, you come to expect that simplicity and that very genuine and direct flavor. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a comfort food at that point. Because wine really is food if you think about it. So wines typically are paired with different food offerings. So that's why when you go to a restaurant, and let's say you're looking at the red meat offerings, for instance, and they will give you a list of wines in their restaurant that they would suggest as a wine that would be served with red meat, for instance, with fish, for instance, with poultry, for instance, or maybe a very carb-laden heavy meal like Italian food, right? You know, you're talking something like a, you know, multi-layer lasagna with a bunch of cheese and something real heavy and lots of pasta. Yeah, certain wines might taste better with certain foods. Wine is essentially a food in a way, and that's the way to treat it. The first one that we're going to be testing today in our flight, this particular bottle of wine is called the Ezra Zion wine, And this is a very, very limited release. In fact, this release is the first year they ever offered the Ezra Zion. And if you guys are familiar, you've probably heard of Ezra Zion from their cigar line. So they wanted to introduce a wine line to go with their cigars, and they're meant to pair up with their cigars. And that's a smart marketing move. So on their part, they're seeing an opportunity in, you know, allowing, you know, basically having an area where someone might, you know, really dig their wine, maybe have a nice cigar, a glass of wine, and then those flavor, you know, flavors are complementary to each other.
Yeah. I mean, you would, I mean, from a marketing aspect, you would almost be foolish to not try to capitalize on that, because you know your flavor profile of your cigar the best. You made it. So then the person that's most qualified to produce a complementary wine to that cigar would be you as well. So so if you know your own product, then it's only going to match perfectly.
So not all wines are created the same in terms of what they're meant to accomplish and everything. I'm going to try to just very briefly give you a super brief synopsis on what we're going through today. We are going to go through some tasting notes, as we always do in our flights. If this is your first time tuning in, just know that's how we do it. Our first three are Cabernet Sauvignon. I hope I'm saying that right. I am going to mispronounce a ton of French words. Go ahead and just get ready for it.
Most people just call it cab.
Have it from cab.
They just say, hey, cab.
So we're getting into our cab here, our Cabernet Sauvignon. All right. I'm just going to give you a brief synopsis of what it means for a wine to be a Cabernet Sauvignon. Let's see. It is one of the world's most widely recognized red wine grape varieties. It is grown in nearly every major wine producing country, along a diverse spectrum of climates, from Canada's Okanagan. I'm not even going to try to pronounce some of these words. Basically, this stuff is made in climates ranging from Lebanon to Canada, to all different types of places. Let's see. It's often blended with a Merlot or a Cabernet Franc, F-R-A-N-C. Let's see, from France and Spain, am I drunk yet? I haven't even drank anything yet. I can't talk today.
Not yet.
I haven't really done much of these narratives, so you have to apologize. I apologize. Let's see, the grape spread across Europe and into the New World, where it found its new home in places like California's Santa Cruz Mountains, all over the place. Let's see. Basically, it is one of the most widely planted wine grape, with a total of 341,000 hectares under vine worldwide. So basically, it just has a very much a predominance in the industry, I guess is the way to approach cab. And also, it has usually a very rich profile.
Yeah,
a very bold taste. It is a red wine, and very good for pairing with meat.
Yep. I've always known cab to be a very robust, a very hearty wine. So if you're into, like, you know, black coffee or dark ales, dark lagers, cigars, things that are really robust, then it's going to have that same flavor profile.
So we're going to go over the tasting notes of our first wine, and we're obviously going to pour some up and give her a taste here. So the Brass Knuckles Bourbon Barrel 2013 Cabernet.
Ooh.
Right, that's what we're drinking. And just to give you an idea of the price, this is a $40 bottle of wine and our most expensive offering today on the table. We do get into some varying prices here on the wines, and this does represent the most expensive. All right. They've taken the same approach to wine as they did with cigars and coffee. So basically small batch and really artisan and very frou-frou and very bougie. Okay. Yeah. I think is what they're going for. And I love the picture on the bottle of the Brass Knuckles. That's very cool, very edgy. The bottle's beautiful. Definitely no complaints there. Great marketing and packaging. Let's see.
I do like the bourbon barrel aspect of it. That intrigues me. I had no idea.
The complex flavors begin with bold notes of vanilla, blackberry, dark chocolate, tobacco, and pepper. That sounds bold. Mm-hmm. Very bold. As the wine decants, caramel, black cherry, cinnamon, orange, and raspberry emerge. And this is no joke. This is probably going to be your newest favorite wine of all time. It's that good. We could sell this wine for over $100 a bottle. That's their marketing claim. We highly recommend that you pair this with our new special edition Cabernet Maduro cigar. Of course, they're going to promote the cigars, which we actually have some, and we're not going to smoke them here with this flight, but I do have some of the cigars.
We will indulge those later.
Absolutely. All right. And this comes out of the Ezra Zion Winery in Alvord, Texas. 15.5% alcohol by volume.
That's pretty high. That's yeah, higher than normal.
Let's pour it up.
I love that marketing marketing gimmick. We could sell this for $100, but we're not. It's $40. But, ooh, that looks good, man.
Oh, man, it looks like blood. All right. Here you go ahead. I'll let you pour.
Thank you. Y'all got it.
I'm not going to pour a ton. Ooh. I've got a few tiny cork pieces here in my glass. That's why I poured first. Oh, we had a little bit of an issue getting the cork out on this bottle. It actually had maybe ended up having a little bit of rot on the cork. When we tried to decork this, the cork simply was real dry and it fell apart.
Yeah, a little bit of dry rot going on.
It was
on.
A little dry.
The wine was intact,
though. This is a 10-year-old bottle of wine.
But the wine was good because when we finally cracked the cork, you did hear that vacuum hiss. So there was no, the wine was not compromised. It was just the cork had fused to the actual bottle.
Not at all. All right. So let's give it a nose here. Smell it. And remember, guys, I'm not a professional wine drinker. Okay.
Sommelier Eric.
Yeah, for real.
It smells lovely.
Mmm. Man, it just... There's just a complexity that's there. Like, I just, this takes it for me as, like, I'm smelling this, and it's just, for me, I'm thinking that this isn't going to be just some simple, you know, taste. Like, I feel like I'm about to get hit with some complexity.
And if I was going to describe it, it smells like a, if you've ever picked strawberries and you have a super dark, rich colored strawberry, it smells like that strawberry looks, like that deep, dark red.
Let's give it a taste.
Yep. That is good.
Mm.
Not going to lie.
It's bitter, but like in a...
It's dry.
It's dry and a little bitter, but in a really good way.
Yep.
The flavors, huge flavor. You get this this warm aftertone, like, you know, as it goes down my throat and I'm taking it in, I'm immediately warmed up. Like, I could just picture a savory steak and having that saltiness and that steak flavor on my tongue after I've taken a bite of a really good ribeye or something. Mm-hmm. And then you take a swig of this, and it has to do also like the temperature. Now, that's a whole other thing I didn't consider is, you know, wine is typically served at various temperatures, and I'm not going to claim to be an expert on what temperature wine is supposed to be served at, because some of it's chilled, some of it's room temperature, some of it may even be, you know, possibly a little higher than room temperature. I don't know. But this wine, as I'm taking it in, this is all room temperature wine. It's got a beautifully delicate flavor that is bitter, but good flavor.
I cabs to me aren't bitter at all because that it is my profile. I drink my coffee black. You know, I like very dark wrapper cigars. So being a robust wine works perfectly for me. Not bitter, but it most definitely has a very, very rich and deep flavor. That's lovely. If you guys were here and able to try this, I highly recommend it. It's one of the better, less expensive bottles of wine that I've had. When I say less, $40 is still expensive, but when you look at some of the other offerings that we are probably going to do here in the near future, you'll see what I mean.
I had some cork pieces in mind, so I decided to go ahead and pour out my initial pour. And then I'm going to go ahead and just pour a little bit more.
Yeah, not a problem.
And just take in a little bit bigger sip.
I'm just enjoying what's left in my glass, because we're about to get wine drunk here in about 10 minutes.
Wine is definitely a different animal. You know, it will sneak up on you if you're not careful. I think it goes without saying, guys, drink responsibly. Okay, if you're operating machinery or a vehicle or a boat or anything, be responsible.
I like it. I think I'm going to be very excited to try their cigars. I know both of us we're both fans of the League of Nines, which is a robust cigar in and of itself. So
the Liga Privada number 9 mm-hmm. is a very robust cigar. Yep. We will be doing some cigar flights.
We'll do that one outside.
We will. And one thing I do want to mention about a cigar flight, though, for me, I probably would not obviously smoke the whole cigar.
Right.
Probably just a taste and mm-hmm. then follow up with some type of spirit. Anyway, we'll get on that later. I don't know if I could smoke 5 cigars in one sitting, mm-hmm. but I could definitely try a few.
We'd be sick, man.
Oh, yeah. You got to think, a cigar is also kind of a long smoke. Yeah. I mean, you know, one that's a relatively large cigar could take you an hour to smoke.
Yeah. I mean, that's if you don't have like a Churchill. You get yourself a Churchill and you're there for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Well, right now, the overall impression that I have of this wine, it is just absolutely beautiful.
It's great. It's a great wine.
I feel like I need a steak in front of me. Like, I feel like I need to be eating fancy.
It has a very, so my final consensus on this wine is it's a very robust, very rich and flavorful wine. It definitely has some fruitiness to it, because as soon as I drank it, it's almost like I tasted like some type of like wild berry, almost like a red berry, right on the borderline of being sweet. It's not sweet, but it is extremely dry.
Okay, so I was wrong about all 3 of these being cabs. Our next one is actually a Shiraz. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly.
Shiraz. Well, I've always heard it as a Shiraz.
Shiraz, yeah. Shiraz, potato.
Yeah.
This is a 2013 19 Crimes Shiraz out of Victoria, Australia. So we're going way across the
down
ocean
under.
Here. Down under.
Yeah.
And so this bottle has this really crazy picture here of Ned Kelly on it. So this is pretty interesting here. Each one declared by His Majesty to be punishable on conviction by transportation. 19 crimes. What an interesting bit of marketing. This one is a 2019 Shiraz, not a 2013.
Yep.
The tasting notes appear to be the same, though. 19 crimes turn criminals into colonists. Upon conviction, British rogues guilty of at least one of the 19 crimes were sentenced to live in Australia rather than death. This punishment by transportation began in 1788, and many of the lawless died at sea. For the rough-hewn prisoners to make it to shore, a new world awaited. As pioneers in a frontier penal colony, they forged a new country and new lives, brick by brick. This wine celebrates the rules they broke and the culture they built. Download our Living Wine Labels AR app. Hashtag talking bottles. And this is made in Australia.
So
by criminals, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a really cool marketing, you know, tactic of theirs. Australia's always been known as kind of that penal colony built by prisoners and you know, stuff like that.
Ned Kelly is most certainly the Robin Hood of Australia.
If my memory serves me correctly, that Shiraz is more on the sweeter side, so okay. It should be a sweeter red wine, not like a super sweet like a Riesling, but a little bit on the sweeter side.
Yeah, let's see. Tasting notes. Shiraz is a red wine blend used mostly in Australia and in California, where the varieties go by the names of Petit Syrah and Syrah, respectively. I know I didn't pronounce those correctly, but y'all can look it up.
Mm-hmm.
New World expressions of this wine are known for their aromas of blueberries, chocolate, licorice, black pepper, and eucalyptus. So,
eucalyptus. Had to slide that in there with them being Australian.
Yeah. All right.
Which is funny because I never knew this before, but koala bears look so like cute and docile apparently because they're high the entire time. Apparently eucalyptus leaves that's all they eat, it makes them very docile. But I've seen video of them going through withdrawals, and they are mean. They are mean little bears.
I have to say, I love the packaging and the marketing. I will admit that's what drew me in when I saw this bottle on the shelf. I saw Ned Kelly, and I'm like, okay, yeah, these people are trying to make a statement. But is the statement is this a trip to Flavortown in the statement, or is this simply a marketing ploy to get you to buy the product? I mean, because one thing in these flights that we always like to discuss, and what I'm very adamant about, is marketing. And I like to look at how the product's marketed, how it's packaged, the amount of care that's taken into it. And when I compare this wine to the other wines that are present here, the packaging looks to be pretty much in line. I will say, I do like the smoke color of the bottle.
Yeah,
it kind of makes me think sort of mysterious. It makes me think, man, you know, I want to see what's in this bottle. I want to pour this liquid out and see what it looks like. It also gives it a vintage sort of look to it when you have this opaque bottle, you know, that's not quite clear like the others. It gives it the look of a vintage, old school wine bottle, more of a construction that you would expect to see in an older bottle.
Yeah. And well, the reason that it stands out is because it's different. It's, with it being frosted like that, it stands out to you more because all the other wine glasses are clear. So in my mind, when I see that, I think premium. Even though it may not be a premium product, you know, they say the tallest glass, the tallest blade of grass gets cut. So that's the bottle that draws my eye to it on the shelf. That's the one that I pay attention to.
That's right. And to be clear, this wine is like a $10 or $12 bottle of wine. So not a very expensive bottle.
Well, that's the thing. Getting into wine is extremely affordable. So it's not like some other hobbies. It's the barrier to entry is quite low.
You can get a $5. Let's give Ned Kelly's wine a little smell here. All right, our Australian friends, let's see what we got going on here.
It's fruity. And it's like fruity and light at the same time. It's very interesting. It's a very airy feeling or smell.
Like for me, you know, and again, remember guys, I'm not some professional wine drinker and, you know, I could have a Neanderthal palate that is lying to me here, but it makes me, I get the feeling that I'm about to drink like some fermented like flowers or something. Like it's got this floral, fruity sort of smell to it. And I'm sort of tempted to think that the palate of it is going to be sweet but bitter.
I could get behind that.
We'll see if I'm right. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Not bad. It's not bad at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bitter like the cab is.
Yeah, not at all. It is somewhat sweet.
I would say so sweet that I would not associate this with a red meat wine as much as a traditional cab.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the flavor profiles that they suggest for the I'm on winesearcher.com for some of the tasting notes. And they actually mentioned that this is a rich, red, and intense flavor and is suggestive for beef and venison. It's odd that they mention venison because venison typically, if not prepared perfectly, can have a very gamey and strong flavor. And I could see where this wine would be really good at taming a gamier piece of meat.
It could. It's very light, very aromatic. It tastes very sweet and fruity. It is the opposite of rich. I do not get like a richness from it like I did the Ezra Zion. That I guess to put it in perspective, drinking the Ezra Zion felt like you were picking up like 45 pounds like in richness. This feels like you're picking up like a 5-pound dumbbell because it's like that richness, that depth isn't there. Not a bad thing. It's just very light and it's...
It's a very comfortable wine to drink.
Yeah, like, I mean, I could drink this all day.
I feel like if someone wasn't much of a red wine kind of person, maybe they don't like the bitterness of a traditional cab.
That's it.
Or something like that's this would it. Be good for someone that prefers maybe a little bit sweeter profile, but still wants to drink, you know, a little bit more red of a wine. I mean, Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it would seem that like on the lighter color, you get a little bit more sweeter, but that's not necessarily the case. We do have a white wine that we're going to test as well as a rosé, which is a very, very sweet light wine. Mm-hmm. So we are going to get into those here in a moment. But as red wine is concerned, I think most people associate red wine with being bitter.
Yeah, this is very, I think this might be the barrier to entry for someone that wants to get into red wine, but isn't wanting to commit to like a cab or a Malbec or something that's a lot really dry, really rich in depth, and could, some would say, have bitter undertones. This is like for someone that drinks coffee with cream and sugar.
Yeah.
This is a cream and sugar coffee drinker's palate.
You know, I will say, though, it's delicious.
It is. I have no problem with it. I would say the Ezra Zion or like cabs in general are more like black coffee because you're just wanting that robust richness. But it's good.
Mm. It's different. It's different, but in a really glorious way. I like it. I really do. We're going to move on to number three here, and we're going to pour up. This has actually become, I have to say, I might be just a slight bit biased. Out of all the wines that are currently present on the table, this is one that I've actually had quite a bit of, and I like it quite a bit. That's why I wanted it to be in today's lineup. Chad and I both, you know, we love wine, and he's been drinking some of this as well, and I've gotten a few bottles to keep laying around. And that is the Federalist Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a 2009 Federalist, and this stuff is fantastic. I'll reach over and grab this for
you. Well, it does have a really cool label. I mean, it definitely fits the show. I mean, you got a good old Ben Franklin sitting there. There you go.
Absolutely. And I will admit, from a marketing perspective, that was one of the things that drew me to this bottle, because I mean, how in the world can you know, not like, you know, a bottle of wine that has one of our founding fathers on it? So I'll admit I was reeled in by that, and the marketing just seemed very clever, and just looked like a cool product, right? This comes out of the Lodi Valley in California. All right, it is a 13.9% alcohol by volume. This one is a 2017 experience here. Retails for about $16 a bottle, so a little bit more than the 19 Crimes by a few dollars. Okay. This comes directly from the winemaker. The Federalist winesmiths rolled up their sleeves and fashioned this cab to quench your thirst for blackberry, cinnamon spice, and American craftsmanship. Now roll up your sleeves and uncork a bottle. The Federalist Cabernet Sauvignon is a purplish-red color, aromas of berries, tart cherry, wheat, sweet oak, and cinnamon. Nice entrance, medium weight, long and lingering finish with good grip from the tannins.
Grip, you say?
A grip. So apparently we are going to have a grip on our taste buds here. And I will admit, I've had this stuff. The color is absolutely beautiful when you pour it out of the bottle.
Well, how about this? Since you've had it, we'll both take a sip. And then before you go too heavy into the tasting notes or anything, I'll give you my, because I've never had it, I'll give you my unadulterated first thoughts on it.
I'm going to make a big pour here because I'm going to definitely enjoy this. Beautiful purple color, as the description says. Oh, you're going to love this, I promise. Got it?
Got it.
Okay. Good stuff. It's quite good. I think you'll really enjoy it.
There you go. All right.
They have quite a few different ones. So go ahead and give her a nose, Matt. I won't interject here because I've already had it. We'll get his...
get some aeration going in there. And just so you guys know, we did aerate these bottles prior. We popped the corks on them. We let them breathe. So that way we could at least get a little bit of an adulterated tasting.
Give it a nose.
Smells lovely. It's very fruity, very light and airy. But it does have a complexity to it. It smells like there's probably about 3 or 4 berries in there, like undertones.
Give it a taste. Let us know what you think.
Hmm. That is really good. That's probably the best one so far. That's outstanding. For a $16 bottle of wine.
Hard to rank them.
That's money right there, man.
Yeah, the knuckle duster bottle. I mean, it's got a complexity, but yeah. This one, it's kind of like in between the 19 Crimes and mm-hmm. the Ezra. Yeah. Like, it's got the complexity of the Ezra, but with the comforting palate of the 19 Crimes.
This is a very easy to drink wine. Like, I could totally, this being a great table wine. So,
it's quite good.
It is. And it's still complex. Like, I'm tasting it, and even though I haven't taken a sip since the very initial sip, it's still kind of digesting in my mouth. It's like breaking apart all of the complexity, the different parts. Like, right now, it's finishing, like, it has like a little bit of alkaline in it, and that's probably from being in the barrel, those tannins in there. So
sulfates.
Yeah, you're still getting some of that alkaline and tannin and sulfates on there. So that's... It's really good. I see why you did a big pour on that.
Oh, yeah. It's 1 second.
No,
it's good.
I'm good, but man, that is outstanding. I'm going to have to pick a bottle of that up next time I go to the store.
I've actually got an uncracked bottle upstairs you can take with you when you leave. I've got a few extras. Yeah.
Yes,
so my local grocery store actually had the Federalist on sale. No, you know, plug or anything, but what I'm saying, I think it was... They were selling it for, I think, $15.89 or something like that, and it was marked down to $11.50.
Get out.
And I picked up 3 bottles of it just to have a few extras and, obviously, to have one to supply for today's flight.
Nice.
So, yeah. I've had this before, and I like it. I wanted something familiar mm-hmm. so that I knew that I had sort of a baseline so that when we were going to be testing some different wines here, it would give me the ability to kind of have something familiar.
Yeah.
I like to have at least one thing in there that I... No.
Do we have an affiliate code for them?
Go buy it.
No, but in all seriousness, an excellent glass of wine right there.
Man, get
and
out
it
of
doesn't,
here.
And it doesn't break the bank. That's the thing. I mean, guys, yes, you could go buy, you know, some Opus 1 2000. Like right now, what's available is 2017. But 2013 was arguably the best. You can get a ton of like just higher end bottles of wine that are, you know, $200, $300, $500. But for $16, that's where it's at.
So far, I would most certainly say that it appears to be the value winner so far in today's flight. But we still have a few others. We're going to get into a Chardonnay. Okay. This one's from Toasted Head. This is a 2018 Chardonnay from California. It doesn't actually specify exactly what region or whatever. It just says it's from California. Let me see. Yeah, it doesn't say where on the website. Is the same thing on the bottle about what region?
No, it just says California. It says Toasted Head is named for the age-old practice of toasting barrel heads with fire, which is what helps to create the distinct toasted flavor in all of our wines. Our Chardonnay is barrel fermented, imparting a unique richness and complexity to the wine, complemented by tropical fruit, peaches, and pineapples on the palate. The finish is well-rounded with toasted coconut and butterscotch notes. It does not say anything about what part of California.
This Chardonnay pairs well with braised meats, lamb shank, cranberry stuffed pork loin, smoked salmon, or pasta with a Cajun cream sauce. So a Chardonnay, at least in my layman's terms, I've always associated a Chardonnay with just sort of a light white wine. And white wines kind of have their own vibe. They're generally not as hearty and complex. They're generally more of a comforting type of thing. And as we can see here, it seems that it pairs well with very savory meats. So you're getting that complexity and that savory kind of taste profile from the meat when you're kind of calming things down with a Chardonnay.
Yep. Typically, right. You'll have these with like a white meat or a fish or seafood or something.
Ooh, that was a big pour.
Yeah, buddy. Is what you'll typically have like a white wine with or a Chardonnay. Here, I'll put it over here.
Yeah, that over there, please. We don't want to spill that.
Yeah. We, okay. tell him, we should definitely tell him the story about breaking off the really, so really expensive bottles.
We were going to record the wine flight a few weeks ago, and I was going to take pictures of the bottles, and I actually knocked a whole bottle of wine over and broke it, and we weren't able to complete the wine. Yeah, actually, it was a bag of wine bottles, and we broke, I think, two of them, and they were the most two expensive bottles of wine that I had, and like, I felt terrible.
Like $200 plus.
I don't know if it was that much, but it was certainly...
One of them was for sure.
One of them was an expensive bottle, which we did not replace for the flight. Which
not this time. Maybe next time.
Maybe in a future flight, you know, we can do one on like, you know, cheap wines, expensive wines. You know, we'll go through and I'm sure we have a few local, you know, shop owners that will extend us, you know, some type of a discount or help us get into some of the fancier ones in order to do our flight. We might even do a future flight actually at the location.
Yeah, that's right.
So keep that in mind. We might do that in a future podcast. So, all right, we've heard the business here. Let's give it a smell.
White wine or I'm guessing Chardonnay is a type of white wine. They have a very distinctive like smell to them. It doesn't quite smell as fruity or as rich as like the red wines. Yeah. I've noticed that. It's kind of flat, like a flat soda.
Like a carbonation. Yeah. You're right. It does have that kind of smell. And instantly, when I smell this wine, I'm transformed to, I don't know, I picture like summer and some like Rita Carlton redneck lady with a stemless tumbler with wine in it yelling at her kids. Like, I don't know. This just makes me think...
I know where you're going with this.
You know what I mean? Like, this makes me think sort of, I don't know, like...
Well, I have the mental picture in my head of what you're trying to
describe. I picture some redneck stepmom drinking this. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to the winemaker. I'm sure they totally, you know, respect and honor the art of winemaking. I'm not saying that. But let's let the taste be the guide. But immediately when I smell it, it just makes me think of, like, cheap wine that redneck women drink on the weekends. Not to say that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not saying that. Hey,
you do you.
I am from the South. You do you. You want to drink? Hey, do you think? All right.
I drank wine out of a box.
That's right. Let's give it a smell. All right. And taste it.
And just like it smells, it's like a very mellow, flat, flat carbonated. Like no zero carbonation. It's like if you left Sprite in the refrigerator for like 4 days.
I feel like I should be yelling at stepchildren.
wearing like a white A shirt or something like that.
All right, now I'm putting myself in the mindset though. Let's change gears. All right, let's go back to food. Okay. I'm from the South. Okay. I can make fun of Southern people. I am a Southern person.
That's right.
So, all right. I've just grabbed a beautiful forkful of a flaky whitefish.
I knew it. That's what I was going to say.
An opa.
Fish. Yep.
Or maybe a nice redfish that's blackened really well.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even a speckled trout or something. And I've got some blackened fish, and I'm going to take a bite of blackened fish. And the flavor profile that I get out of a fish, I feel like if I immediately took a sip of this to wash it down, that it would most certainly balance out those flavors perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I could see this as being great for fish or even like a hearty beef, like they mentioned. I could see that. And in smoked salmon, perfect comparison. Smoked salmon's really hearty, but it still does have that little bit of a fishy profile. So anything that could have even the most minute amount of fishy gaminess to it, I could totally see this being something that would kind of mellow that out.
Most definitely. It's when you think, when I'm drinking this, I'm like, all right, well, I'm not a huge fish person, but I mean, I'm not opposed to eating if it's like a white flaky fish. Like if you had like maybe a tilapia or something that's like really have some depth to it. That's I guess a thicker fish, a thicker cut, I guess. But the acidity in the wine does kind of cut through it. It would work out perfectly.
This would be good for, honestly, I know this is going to sound crazy, but if you had, let's say, a dish consisting of a fried pork chop, you know, with like maybe some nice hearty mashed potatoes and some Brussels sprouts or something, this would be the perfect thing to wash that down with.
Chilean sea bass.
Sea bass. Mm. You know, anything, that a white ocean fish that's flaky. Yeah. I don't know if it would be your ticket for, you know, tuna.
Swordfish?
Or maybe. A good hearty fish would certainly pair well with this. Shark? Even fried fish.
You do shark? I'm kidding.
Yeah, I've never been of a shark kind of guy. I must admit, not my favorite.
No, it lacks pretty much everything that I look for in a libation of the from the spirits.
This is a wine that's dangerous.
What's like, the
this is a type of wine that you could drink a lot of and for a long time. It's a very comforting wine. Mm-hmm. It's very basic. It's easy on the palate. It's very easy to drink. It's not bitter or off-putting. It's very simple. But this is totally the type of wine that you could sip on, and this is dangerous.
It was 14%. So, I mean, you literally could sit here and drink this bottle from top to bottom by yourself mm-hmm. at 14%, and you'd be pretty sloshed.
Yeah. And we've had quite a bit to drink. I mean, these pours haven't been that big, but we're certainly getting down.
I think the time frame in which it's consumed might have something to do with it. I'm not getting any of the toasted or coconut or anything that was in the tasting notes. I don't know. I don't understand where that came from, because I taste no coconuts, no toastedness, nothing.
You know, I do. You're going to think I'm crazy. I'm not being biased here, but mm-hmm. I do detect a little bit of a smokiness in there, sort of a toasted type of flavor. It's very subtle. I wouldn't define it as I wouldn't consider it a defining characteristic that I'd point my finger to and go, oh, that's a toasted barrel versus a non-toasted barrel. It's not that in there, but it's kind of an underlying, you know, sort of thing. It is there, but it's very, very faint. And also, you have to understand, I've had these other wines. I'm sure there's people that are going to go, well, your palate is contaminated with the other wine, so you can't possibly know what you're tasting. But I disagree. I mean, I can certainly pick apart some of the nuance. It's a very simple flavor profile, but it's a good flavor. It's just very, very different than the darker red wines, which I tend to honestly prefer these types of wines.
I really do. It's got a much, much more of my palate.
All right. So our last wine comes out of Italy, and it's very odd that on this particular wine, this is one of the sweetest wines that you can get. This is a rosé, which would be certainly in the category of a dessert wine. It's got a regular metal screw on top, so this is not a cork arrangement here.
Love me some screw-off cap wine.
Yeah, but look, here's the thing. Okay, beautiful packaging. The bottle is absolutely gorgeous, especially with the wine in it. It's got this beautiful pink hue to it. It is just absolutely charming. On the packaging.
I believe that's carbonated too. I can see like the carbonation bubbles.
We do have some carbonation rising, yep. As you mentioned. So this particular, so get this, 95 points gold medal at the Los Angeles International Wine Competition.
Hmm.
So it's got to be doing something right. And to be fair, this is like a $10 bottle of wine. So not an expensive bottle of wine. The rosés are generally more of a, what we would call a dessert wine. I know that's a weird thing, but like, it's like a wine that you would have as a nightcap after dessert. Like you're having your dessert and then you've got all that sugar and that sweetness on your palate from eating dessert, but you want a wine to complement a sweet right. dish after dessert. So you can have a little nightcap before you go on with your business for the evening. So, it's very, out of all of these that we've tasted so far, this one is going to be insanely utterly sweet.
Yep. I've had a rosé before. Usually it's the wife that drinks that, but
right.
Yeah, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, this one's definitely probably, yeah, you're right. A wine that's probably associated more with a female wanting a very like when I think a rosé, I think wine that a lady might drink that hates wine but wants to drink right. wine.
Or they're by the pool because it's normally served like super chilled. Mm-hmm. So they're like by the pool and they're drinking it like with mimosas, and then they have like rosé because it's more, I would consider that more like a
comfort wine.
Yeah, but what, I forget the name of it. It's similar to a champagne, sparkling wine. It's more like a sparkling wine.
Okay, I can see that. So, all right, we are going to go over, we've got some different notes here. We'll just go over real quick. So the Stella Rosa Rosé, this one's, yeah, Stella Rosa Rosé.
Yep, that's a tongue twister. Don't forget the little asterisk.
All right, Stella Rosa Rosé has the perfect hint of sweetness and an equal balance of grace, beauty, and peace. Qualities you'll immediately discover within yourself as you fall in love with this wine. The flavor profile, wild mountain berries and rose petals. Wow.
Puppy kisses and butterflies.
That's very specific, oddly specific. It comes in a couple of size variations. This is a 750 milliliter bottle. Food pairing recommendations, pork, a red velvet cake.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two very specific pairings.
I couldn't see it going with pork unless you got some type of like, oh, top's already off.
Oh, I knew that. I was testing you.
Yep.
I ain't that drunk yet. All right. Pour it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine having this with a pork, but I could be wrong.
It is carbonated.
Wouldn't be the first time.
There's definitely some bubble action going on, so it is a carbonated beverage. A sparkling wine, if you will.
Sparkling wine, because champagne can only come from Champagne, France. Everything else is sparkling
wine. Oh, boy. Getting some of that.
Dropping knowledge.
That's right. Okay. Will you put the cap back on that, please?
Yeah.
It is carbonate. I don't want it all carbonation getting out of it. Let's give it a smell. Whoa.
Yep. Like a nose full of, actually, nose full of roses.
It's like someone melted down Skittles.
Yeah, it smells like it's probably going to taste.
It makes me think of being a young kid with a redneck mom by the pool on a summer. And you walk by and you smell what she's got in her glass and it's this.
Yep.
Like it makes me think almost of a sangria.
Yeah, sangria.
Real sweet.
Yeah. It's like the boxed wine in a nutshell.
Yeah, but I mean, this thing won some awards here, so let's see if it's got the gold medal taste. Let's give it a taste.
Ooh,
man,
that's tasty.
Dang. Ooh, that will get you in trouble. That will
make you want to slap your mama,
son.
That is good. That's real good.
Man, that is freaking fantastic. Man.
I can see why that won some awards.
Dude.
Like, I am not a sweet wine person, but that's not overly sweet. It's like right on the cusp. It's pretty good.
Man, you know, I hate to admit this. Look, I'm a hearty wine kind of guy. Let me just preface what I'm about to say, because I don't want to get my man card pulled, okay? Because I like a big, bold, crazy red wine that is just the trip to flavor town and complex. Mm-hmm. And it's got all this cool stuff going on with it. But, be that as it may, this wine is absolutely fantastic.
It is. I'm going to have seconds. That's really, really good.
The carbonation sort of lifts it up off your palate. Like it's lofting on your palate with the carbonation. It's almost like an alcoholic Sprite with a bit of a floral flavor, a little bit of a fruity flavor. That's what it reminds me of. It's like alcoholic Sprite. I feel like I'm drinking Sprite. But it's like Sprite with side effects.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the alcohol content, but it's not really.
Oh, man, I'm going to tell you something right there. That is one fantastic bottle of wine. Yeah, I'm trying to see about the alcohol content. I can most certainly look it up. While you're talking, I'll look it up.
Yes, I'm going to have a little bit more because that is outstanding. I'm with Eric. I love a robust, dark red wine. I mean, the Federalist, I think we both agreed, was our favorite up until this point. And I mean, I would almost have to say we have to segment it into two, our favorite red wine and our favorite non-red wine.
So I want to make it clear, this is a low alcohol content wine. It comes at only 5.5%.
So it's like drinking a beer.
It is. It's a very low alcohol wine. So for some folks that want to be in a social situation where maybe they get the benefit of drinking wine, or if someone wants to be kind, and let's just say your host says, would you like some wine? And they're all going to have a toast at dinner, or it's like a business meeting and everybody wants to have a glass of wine with their meal or something. And you don't want to be rude if someone offers you wine. This is a great wine if you are not much on the, you know, bold flavors of a darker wine, but you want to drink wine, but you don't want to have as much of the alcohol content. I could see where this would be a great wine that can kind of bridge the gap between people that don't like wine and those that do. Anyone can drink that and be like, wow, that's delicious.
I would totally agree with that. And plus, it allows you to drink for a longer period of time. If you're kind of out there by the pool, you're not trying to get sloshed, but you still want something refreshing, you could. I'm not saying I would drink that at the pool because I wouldn't, but I might sip some of my wife's because that's what she would be drinking.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great wine to enjoy even with your meal if you want. And you could always have a glass of water in between every glass of wine and keep yourself hydrated. Oh, that's a dangerous wine. You could certainly drink a lot of that and not really get as you know, buzzed.
Yeah. So that's 5% compared to like 15% on the red. There was one that we had that was like 15%.
Right. I think it was the first one.
Yeah.
The Knuckle Duster wine or whatever it was.
Ezra Zion.
The Ezra wine. Zion. So, all right. If we had to, so we're almost wrapped up here for this flight. We always like to try to rate the wines based on the ones that we like the most or whatever type of spirit we're trying. So how would you rate these in order from your favorite to your least favorite?
Okay. Favorite would be the Federalist, bar none. That came in way above everybody else. Second, I did get down with the Ezra Zion. I thought that was I liked it because of the complexity. And again, that was one of those things where it kept me guessing. Third would be 19 Crimes. Very easy wine to drink. That's on the reds. I can't really compare and lump the white and rosé in with the reds because they're two different types or three different types.
It's a different adventure.
Yeah. I absolutely didn't like the Chardonnay. I don't know what the appeal is for that. Not a Chardonnay kind of guy. I don't know if it's just this particular one, Toasted Head, but maybe it's just in general. The Stella Rosa Rosé was fantastic. If you guys haven't tried it, I highly recommend.
You know, it's really hard for me to lump these up into some form of an order. I agree. I feel like the reds, you know, maybe what we probably should have done for this flight would be to just do all reds. Probably would have been the best thing to do. But in my mind, I was trying to go for some variety. So what we'll do in a future podcast is we will try to lump the wines together based on, you know, maybe region, maybe, you know, the type that it is and try to narrow it down a little bit. But I would say overall, holistically, on what we all, you know, what we tasted today, I probably preferred the Federalist the most out of all of them, followed by the Ezra, followed by the 19 Crimes, the Rosa Rosé, and the Toasted Head coming in last. Not to say it's not a good bit of alcohol, but that it just did, it spoke to me less than everything else on the table. So I have to objectively rate it, you know, accordingly. I'm not saying it wouldn't be good for certain applications, but for my palate and what I enjoy in a wine, it really offered probably the least to me what I was looking for.
I 100% agree.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We hope that you enjoyed this podcast, or if you're watching over on the channel, we hope you enjoyed watching in video form. These are available over on the Iraq Veteran 8888 YouTube channel if you want to check them out. We don't always post them every single episode, but most of them we try to. We will see you next Friday. We've got a ton of other great podcasts on the way. We hope you'll tune in for those. We really appreciate the support. Have a good one. And this has been our wine flight, and we're going to try to definitely get on some other flights, we may even be taking some field trips.
Oh, yeah. We do have some plans.
We've got some trips planned, and I think you'll be surprised at where we will be recording some of our future podcasts. I'm not going to spoil the surprise, but make sure you are following us at LLP Podcast over on Instagram for any behind-the-scenes stuff as to what we might have going on. You can also follow me on IraqVeteran8888Official on Instagram. Just look it up. We're over there. So anything that we have going on behind the scenes for the podcast, you'll probably find it there before you will on the actual Instagram page of the podcast itself, but we do try to cross-promote. And also make sure you're following Ballistic Inc. So between all of those different areas, you can always see what we got going on. So thank you so much. Many more podcasts on the way. We post every Friday here late in the week on LLP. We hope you'll tune in. Have a great one, and we will catch y'all soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Pursuit. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. You can support us over on Ballistic Inc. by picking yourself up some merch. And remember, guys, dangerous freedom. Have a good one.